Welcome back to the Mark Claire Show. I've got a very special guest today. He is returning from episode 3 on this podcast. I'm welcoming back the great Charlie Robinson, host of the Macro Aggressions Podcast, author of many books, including The Octopus of Global Control. Charlie, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back. Wow, no, episode 3. Really?
Yeah, you're one of the OGs of this era,
right. Anyway,
of my podcast journey, so to speak.
Well, good. I mean, sometimes my name will get people canceled alone. So I'm glad that there were more. I was glad there was episode 4, to be honest with you.
Yeah, maybe it means we didn't go hard enough, I guess in that episode. So,
we can fix that.
We'll see if we can top it today. But Charlie, I did a very short version of your bio there, but maybe just in case, I'd like to think I have some new listeners from beyond episode 3. So maybe you can do the kind of Cliff Notes version of what it is you do at Macro Aggressions, how you got here, all that stuff.
I started writing books in 2017. I wrote a book called The Octopus of Global Control and went out on the road and started talking about it, publicizing it, trying to tell people what I had come up with. And while doing that, I wound up on Jeff Berwick's podcast called The Anarchast. And we got done recording the episode where I was talking about the Octopus book, and he said, "Hey, would you want to work on a book with me?" And I said, "I don't know. What do we have? What are you thinking?" And so we started talking about that. That turned into book number 2, The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire. And then while I was out sort of, promoting the first book and finishing up the second book, the podcast happened, Macro Aggressions. And so that's now... We're a little bit over 4 years now. It just coincidentally started right when the pandemic started. It wasn't part of my plan. I'm not responsible for COVID as far as I know. Although I might be.
I'm sure you've been accused of
crazy I've been things. Accused of plenty of things. That is, if I haven't been accused of starting COVID yet, then it's bound to come at some point. But that started 4 years ago, and it's been just one of the most rewarding thing I've ever done. I get this great opportunity. I talk to all kinds of unusual people that I would never meet in a million years. I talked to Adam Curry last night on Union of the Unwanted on our group show. I mean, I remember watching Adam Curry when he was a VJ on MTV back in the 90s. You know what I mean? And then he goes and starts podcasting, and then and next thing you know, he's on our group show. I'm just winging it at this point. I'm writing books because I enjoy it. I'm doing the podcast and talking to interesting people because I enjoy it. I've got no business plan. I've got no plan. I got nothing. I'm just going for it. And as a result of that, I'll tell you what, it's been the best decision I ever made, because from the books and the podcasts and setting out on this journey, I have had an opportunity to speak at Anarchapulco on several occasions. That's Anarchapulco, the largest anarchist conference in Acapulco, Mexico. Happens every year. Been a speaker there a couple of times, was the host and MC of the event this year. So none of that stuff would have happened if I had listened to, I don't know, maybe my friends, my family, anybody that would have told me, don't do this. What are you doing, man? This seems like a bad strategy. You have no plan at all, do you? And the answer is, you're correct. I have no plan. But sometimes the best plan is not to have a plan, and it's led me to where we are now. And I, frankly, I come out of real estate, so I'm like, I'm from a traditionally boring industry. But part of that actually led me to where I am now, because I had to go through watching the real estate industry boom and bust in Las Vegas when I was there from 2003 through 2012. I rode that cycle up, I rode it down, and I watched how markets get manipulated and how fake everything is and how the economy is totally not as you think it is. And it started me down, and I was in the industry and I got burned like everybody else did. And you'd think I'd know, because I'm in the industry, you'd think I'd be able to see it, and I couldn't see it. And so part of this whole journey that I'm on has been, I think, kind of from getting burned in the real estate industry, from working in the industry, watching everything go on, thinking, well, clearly you're going to be able to see it before anyone else because you're in it. And I didn't even understand it. And so it became like, you know, I was like the sucker at the three-card Monty game. And I just did, you know, I'm like, I'm not playing the game anymore. Just show me how it works. Where does the little ball go? When you guys, you know, like show me how the scam works. I just want to understand it. And that led me to understanding money. And money led you to the Federal Reserve. And you go, whoa, that's a big mess there. And then that leads you to Wall Street. And then, you know, and the next thing you know, I'm reading John Perkins' book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And I'm going, wait a second. This is a massive scam. This isn't just like some regional real estate pump and dump. This is how you enslave the world. It's how you enslave countries. You know, you sign them on to big massive debts that they can't really repay, but you tell them that you think they can, and then they can't. They fall behind in it, and then you extract something, but you take something tangible. You know, like how we're repoing these houses that you just sold to all your customers. Well, the World Bank and IMF and the United States Empire does the same thing, but they do it to countries.
Yeah, why stop at just regular people? We have entire countries out there we can do this to.
right. We could individually enslave these people one at a time, or we could just take their entire country all at once, get them all under the...
Heaven forbid we actually find planets out there, because you know that's obviously next on the list.
Well, listen, man, it's been such a interesting journey, because I started down this path thinking I was going to understand money, and the next thing you know, I'm talking at anarchist conferences, and I'm realizing none of this stuff is really necessary. This government isn't, the media is lying to me, the banks are fraudulent, every marketplace that Wall Street operates in is either compromised by them and they've been found guilty of it, or it's in the process of being compromised, and it can leave you feeling like a little disoriented, because you're like, oh man, everything's a scam. But at the same time, I have gone full circle, and now I just have a good laugh about how absurd everything is. And that's, I think, probably the reason why you and I are talking, because we find we have the ability to find the humor in things that maybe really aren't super funny, but you have to laugh at how preposterous and absurd things have gotten in order probably just to keep from crying, right?
Yeah, I mean, I have a great Telegram group that I started with some fans of this show, just kind of on a whim. And that thing in there, my God, that thing keeps me sane. I mean, it's just a string of memes and inside jokes about things we talk about on this show. But it does encapsulate, even though we do get into some somewhat serious topics, I suppose, on this show. You gotta enjoy this journey, because at some point I think there is sort of like a conspiracy theorist journey of sorts, like sort of like the hero's journey, just a little bit weirder. And there's a couple ways you can come out of that. I mean, you can emerge from that in the darkest like place. And I've been on part of that path before, where you just see darkness upon darkness and darkness. You're going down all these rabbit holes, and every one you turn into, you find something even darker and even deeper than you ever suspected in the first place. At some point, you're either going to come out of that in a really dark place, and maybe we don't even talk to those people. They probably don't have podcasts, or they have ones that we just don't get involved with, I suppose. Or you've got to come out laughing about it in some way and just sort of embracing the ride, because at some point, this is just also absurd that if you're not laughing, you're dying.
I would do Kev Baker show every once a month for 4 years. And Kev was my good friend in Glasgow, Scotland. He passed away the first week of January 2022. He had COPD. He had a lung issue, you know, and COVID comes around. It was a really bad combo for him. But before he passed away, he and I had the same really screwed up sense of humor when it came to all this stuff, where we could kind of laugh at how absurd it had gotten. And I was, it was Christmas time, and I was walking through this mall that's not too far from my house, kind of like the depressing mall where half the stores have left and half of them are still there. And I come around the corner, and there's this women's clothing store, and it's just, the name of it is just the capital letter Q. Right. So it just says Q right there. And I see that and I go, oh God, I pull my phone out, take a picture, send it over to Kev. Hey man, I'm at the store. Do you need anything? You know, because you gotta kind of laugh and like, hey, there's an entire store dedicated to Q. I wonder what could be in there. Well, unfortunately for us, it was just women's clothing. It could have been, you know, it could have been.
Or was it? Or that's, or was that's it? What really? They want, yeah, you to
maybe.
Believe.
I didn't go into the dressing rooms. Maybe it's like,
Well, if you look at some of the price tags, you'll see an 878. If you do the gematria on that, that actually adds up to Trump will win.
There you go. Yeah, see, that's the gematria discount is at the register. You have to go there. They run it through a special code, and they're like, we take you on the back and give you the real discount. But that was my feeling on this stuff, was that I was always going to try and find the humor in it if I could. And part of that had to do with writing the Octopus book too, because when I'm writing this book, and it's 540 pages, and it's heavy duty material, right? It's like, you know, we're talking about global enslavement, you know, it's not the most fun topics, but I could
gather around, kids. Let me tell you a tale.
Let me tell you how grandma was enslaved by debt. But I would find these nuggets of humor in there that were just so, you know, so absurdities. And so I made sure that when I was writing that book, that I could tie it together in a way that would crack people up at the end. You know, that's why I've described it as, you know, the description of the book does include the word humorous, which you wouldn't think when you're talking about such dark topics. But my need to kind of lighten everything up by poking fun at how crazy things have gotten, it's probably more of a coping mechanism than anything, right? For my own sanity. But I think it helps the readers as well, because we see this, we see what's going on. I mean, you can see how serious it is too, but if you can't also have a laugh, you know, like you go through COVID is the worst and COVID is killing everybody and they're going to make everybody take these shots, and then cut to Bill de Blasio eating a cheeseburger going, this is the best cheeseburger, I bet you guys would like that. I mean, you have to laugh at how I mean, you could take the seriousness of COVID.
You almost got to appreciate them on some level. That they can either go that far without seeing the humor in it, or be that oblivious, or they actually do see the humor, and they're just doing this partially for our fun too.
It's funny either way. Works either way. Either they can't see the humor in it, and they think that Bill de Blasio eating a cheeseburger is the best ad for a vaccine that they could come up with. That's funny in and of itself. But if they also kind of know that there's a big joke and they put that out to troll us, I could appreciate that too. You know, I can appreciate their sense of humor. Like, let's watch us make the videos. I got an idea.
Let's try donuts next.
Let's tell them that we can give them donuts for their health. You know, you could just see them all cracking up in a big room. And they're like, no, wait. Go ahead, tell them two laps around Talladega Speedway as well.
Okay, it's like that meme with all like the shape-shifting reptilians that are just laughing about it, you know, and then we'll tell them.
In the background, they're all bent over laughing. That's kind of what it feels like sometimes. So on the one hand, they're awful for doing that to us. But on the other hand, you kind of have to appreciate that they've transcended to the point where they're just going to make fun of us while they convince us to eat donuts. I mean, listen, it's funny that you tried to pass off a free donut a day from Krispy Kreme as an incentive to inject yourself with an experimental medical procedure in the name of health. I mean, that's funny. That's hysterical.
I wouldn't be surprised if maybe in San Francisco or something, they eventually actually offered heroin with your, you know, you didn't get a double injection. You get your shot, you get your heroin. You're all good.
I mean, you're covered either way, right? Yeah. You're going to you like needles? You like needles? We're trying to give away all these other needles. They're preloaded with this stuff. Come over here.
If you can turn in a gun for all this somehow, we can really make some magic happen.
God. I wish we were kidding, but of course San Francisco exists.
Yes.
And we don't have to, we could just send people there. They can go take a look and see what's happening. We have, whether it's Chesa Bowden, the former district attorney that decriminalized everything, or Scott Wiener from the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, who's actively campaigning to lower the age of consent with children. So there's a little of everything going on in San Francisco if you're interested.
Well, on the subject of San Francisco, this is one of the topics I wanted to get into. It's kind of breaking news. It'll be breaking for the Patreons and the Mark Claire Show premium subscribers who get the show a little bit early. But RFK did just announce his VP pick moments before we hopped on air, I guess you want to say. It's someone I've never heard of, but it's interesting because I think a lot of people were expecting, you know, there's always all these crazy, you know, rumors out there, like he's going to pick Joe Rogan or like, you know, or Tulsi Gabbard. Or something like that. Aaron Rodgers. That was my favorite one. I'm like, I would love it. I mean, it would be hilarious. And I would, you know, talk about it endlessly if that happened, but that was not going to happen. But he went with someone a lot more, apparently vanilla. I've never heard of this person. I don't think there's any reason for me to have heard of this person. Her name is Nicole Shanahan. But apparently, this is just, look, I'm getting this from a Charlie Kirk tweet right now, okay? Because that's the only info I found. This is breaking news. I haven't done research. So, you know, I'm not saying follow Charlie Kirk for your advice. It's just the first tweet that came up when I was searching for information on this disclaimer. Right. But she's apparently a Soros-backed prosecutor and is somebody who was sort of involved in helping wreck San Francisco and is currently doing so in L.A. These are Charlie Kirk's words. But point being, this is a far-left pick. This is a very progressive pick. It is not someone that is sort of catering to the right wing at all. It is not really catering to even like maybe the anti-vax crowd that might normally sort of side with RFK. But I find it interesting just from looking at the politics of it. I think a lot of people might have seen RFK pulling from Trump. This VP pick kind of puts him more in that sort of progressive left-wing light of things and makes it seem almost like he's more going after Biden voters ultimately than he is Trump voters. And then in the grand scheme of things, depending on how controlled you think this stuff is meant to be, that might say one thing or another about where you think the election is going to go. But I'm just curious your thoughts on RFK's entry into politics in general here, and then we can maybe dig into the weeds on this.
Boy, I mean, you know, so I love his stance on the pharmaceutical industry. He's been deeply antagonistic against Fauci, obviously, wrote a book about him, and I love all of that. And that needed to be said a while ago. I mean, pre-COVID, the same argument could be made about the pharmaceutical industry. He's been deeply vocal about vaccines in particular. So I like all that. He lost me on the Israel stuff. He lost me when he brought when he legitimized Rabbi Shmuley and brought him in and was like, I'm getting, you know, I'm getting re-educated on Israel.
Once you see Shmuley, you got to run.
Yeah. If Shmuley is advising you, you've made a serious error in judgment.
I think as a general rule for adults, if you're getting advice for someone named Shmuley, just as a general rule,
it's not good.
Yeah,
it's never good. It's never good. So he's been trending out of my area of support for a while now. But and I don't think that anybody really thinks he's actually going to become the president of the United States. I think that's inconceivable given our current structure. It's not to say that I think Joe Biden or Trump are better than him. I don't like any of them. I don't like politicians. I think anybody that wants to become a politician, you have to be very suspect of. You know, as they say, the person that should be the president of the United States should be dragged kicking and screaming into office, because anybody that really wants that job, especially when you're a billionaire who wants $1 million a year job, there's inherently some math that's not adding up there. So I don't trust anybody that wants to be the president. That being said, it's a bit like professional wrestling. I think it's fun to watch to watch what happens. I think that it's been.
You're right in my wheelhouse with the pro wrestling talk. So we're listeners of the show might even be sick of hearing about professional wrestling. That's how much it has tended to come up here.
Well, it feels, you know, I mean, much like professional wrestling. Are they really getting thrown around the ring? Yeah. Are they really, you know, are they really taking these punches? Are they getting thrown on top of tables? Sure. Yes. All that stuff. It doesn't mean that that's not real. That's really happening. But it just means that the show component of it is just, it's, you know, this is what we get. The media loves it. We've got 7 more months or so to go of this nonsense that we're going to get. And I mean, I'm ready for it to be over already, but It's been fascinating to watch the response to RFK Jr. from the people on the left, because they should want to like him, right? Because he's a Kennedy. He comes out of Camelot. He's their whole brand, right? That was back when the Democrats had an identity as being something other than what they are now. Now they see him, and you know, his wife is actively like against him on his like politics, right? His wife is like a hardcore lefty, Hollywood actress, and she
even hosted a party that required vaccines while he was actively going out against the vaccine. And I think he said something along the lines of like, "Well, sometimes you don't get to make all the decisions in your house," which I sadly laughed at with him.
No, I understand.
I understood, but also was like,
yeah. I understand, but it's like you're first of all, don't bother appealing to those people. Don't bother. We've all figured this out just from doing our podcast and having interactions with family and friends. You're wasting your breath. You're never going to convince those people that are four shots in that they've made a catastrophic mistake. They're never going to buy it. And that is the Hollywood left. That San Francisco, LA, liberal East Coast and West Coast. Even if they thought that what he was saying was true about the dangers of the vaccine, they're already pot committed. They're already in. They've already been injected. They're on that team. There's nothing they can. They're predisposed to not want to believe what he has to say, because what he is going to say about what they have done to themselves is catastrophic, and they don't want to hear it. So he's never going to win those voters. He should focus on the Trump people. But it doesn't matter, because Trump is a steamroller. And if you were sort of half on the Trump train or sort of indifferent to it, you may still not vote for him. But it is undeniable now that there is an organized campaign to keep him from becoming the president. And you have to recognize that with all the lawsuits and the what's going on in Georgia and what's going on in New York and the fines and the E. Jean Carroll, who comes out and says, you know, Trump raped me. And they say, well, what year was it? And she says, well, I don't remember what year it was. And then I named my dog Vagina. And everyone's like, what are you talking about? And she's like, giving interviews with Anderson Cooper, where she's talking about how hot rape is, and you start listening, watching this, and you go, "Am I on drugs? Am I out?" I mean, you guys want to get this guy so bad that you have brought a literal crazy person in to accuse him of rape, but which is maybe the worst thing you can be accused of, short of murder.
It used to be. Now, being racist, I believe, is worse than that.
Or yeah, well, that's true. That's true.
Gender of some kind.
So, in theory, if you had been raped, it would be a big deal, right? Like the sort of deal that you might even remember what year it happened. She can't be bothered with that, right? So you see this, reasonable, rational, logical people see this and go, are you fucking kidding me? Like, this is nonsense. So you understand that this is being made to happen. Then all the lawsuits going after his assets. And I worked in real estate for 25 years, and I've seen, I mean, I know developers by their own nature are scumbags. I mean, they kind of are. So they're not going to get much sympathy from me in the legal case against him as a developer. But there were no parties that were upset with this. The banks were fine with the arrangement that he paid it all. He paid the loan back. They know the game. They play the game. Everybody, all the developers play this game where they inflate assets and get loans based upon that. And they only get a fraction of it. That's why they inflate the assets, because they know they're only going to get a fraction. It's a game.
That's just called using the current accounting laws that everyone else would also use, essentially.
Exactly. And so we see that and you go, that's a real nothing burger. All right, so we've got a non-rape and we've got a non-crime against a bank who isn't even, who the bank isn't even complaining about this, right? So you go, this feels very flimsy. Then you've got the Atlanta situation where the DA is sleeping with the prosecutor, and the prosecutor has never tried a criminal case before, and he certainly hasn't tried a RICO case. And you look at this and you go, again, I feel like I'm on drugs. If I'm looking at this is like you wondered, was there a conversation along the way? Listen, you're about to charge the former president of the United States with RICO. You better have everything buttoned up, right? Is your lawyer, is your prosecutor the best RICO guy that you've ever seen? No, he's actually never tried a RICO case. He's actually never tried a criminal case. He's a divorce attorney. Oh, and I'm sleeping with him.
Really? You want what? Rudy Giuliani, the prosecutor? I mean, he's got the history.
So it's like you look at this and you go, there's just incompetence everywhere. And it's because they're desperate to get rid of this guy, Donald Trump. They hate him. And I don't like Donald Trump. I mean, I'm not like, I really don't have any energy one way or the other. I mean, he's kind of like, there's aspects of him that I find hilarious. And there's other aspects of him that I find disgusting. But it was mostly like just personality traits that I don't really care for. And it's not even really so political. But I say that to let the record reflect that I'm not in the Trump camp. And even I can see that he's being totally railroaded on all these things. So it's like this is the best we've got in America. We have a current president that doesn't know where he is, and then the other guy who's running against him, you're actively trying to put him in prison or bankrupt him because you're so terrified that he's going to come in and expose all the criminality. It's like, how can you not laugh at this situation? Like it is pro wrestling. I'm waiting for Joe Biden with a folding chair to just come up right behind him because it feels like that's what's next, right?
Well, speaking of the pro wrestling, you know, aspect of this, and I think it really is the perfect way to look at politics, is this is why it does keep coming up whenever I talk about politics, because it does blur the line, just like politics was. Wrestling is not wholly fake and it's not wholly real. It's actually both. Like you said, there are real people being thrown around. They're going through real quote unquote tables that might not be the same table that a normal person, well, normal people don't fall through tables, but you know what I mean. And there's real stuff happening. And in the back, there's real people that often don't get along. And sometimes they even allow those real feuds to spill into the storyline because it makes it all feel more real. Well, the same thing happens in politics. There are real people that don't like each other. There are real people vying for power on various sides of things, but there is also a grander storyline that we are sort of meant to see. And I'm curious when it comes to Trump, how you view this. And I go back and forth on it because like you laid out here, it's very, very clear from anybody paying attention that at least on the surface level of things, they're using everything they can possibly do to the point of complete absurdity to try to get him out of the race, to make him, you know, disqualify him from ballots, put him in jail, whatever it takes. On the other hand, the part of me that I was always trying to look at the grander storyline makes me think, well, is this all part of the storyline that's meant to make some people root for Trump, that's meant to make Trump more of sort of like the rising hero to some? Is this part of the storyline that actually sees Trump coming back into power or leads to another contested election of some kind, which might lead to something that you might even call a controlled demolition of America, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, I think that most of politics is pro wrestling. And I think that, like you said, sometimes they really just don't like the people. I think they really don't like Trump. Mm-hmm. I think that that's not fake. I think
so. He's like the CM Punk, just to use a little more specific analogy. He's a guy who's very famous, very popular with the fans, but also it's known that a lot of people in real life don't like him. And a lot of those things do come out in storyline. So both can be true in this case.
Yeah, and they are terrified of him. And because he is, as I put this in the Octopus book, this quote from Newt Gingrich. It's the only time that I can think of that I've ever agreed with Newt Gingrich on something. But he said this in 2016. It was right after Trump had been elected, but before he had been inaugurated. He said, Donald Trump is going to have a really hard time in Washington, D.C. He's not part of the inner circle. He's not part of the secret societies. And that part stood out to me because he is, in some, if you think of it like a Venn diagram, there is some overlapping between Trump and the power circles that he's in New York and the power people in Washington, D.C. And they know each other and they go, you know, that's why he's at Hillary's wedding or you know, Chelsea's wedding or, you know, like how they're all like kind of intermingled and they're all friends and they all sort of know each other socially. But there is another component to Washington, D.C. that he is not a part of, and that is the secret societies. And that part really matters. And that is the part that they use to control each other. And it's very effective. That's why you really kind of see like the Republicans and Democrats like play wrestling with each other over the years and then going out on the same golf courses together because they all...
Today's episode is sponsored by Fox & Sons Coffee. And let me just tell you, Steven of Fox & Sons, he is not just an advertiser. He has been a supporter of this show from day one. And frankly, since before day one, because he came over with me from the old Lions and Liberty days. So true fan of the show. He started this company, Fox & Sons, out of his love for coffee and really out of wanting to further bond with his sons and spend time with him, just like he shared time with his father drinking coffee. He also gets to teach his sons about entrepreneurship and business through this endeavor. So I'm so happy to have Steven and really his whole family, the Fox and the Sons, the whole gang as a supporters and sponsors of this show. Not only that, his beans are so high quality, fresh. Look, I just got two new bags right here. I got the Mexican and my favorite, the Den Blend Dark. The beans are super high quality, fresh and sourced from small organic farms, fair trade. None of this GMO garbage. They're all small batch roasted. This is high quality stuff. Subscriptions are by far the best way to get your coffee. I have a couple subscriptions going, but that is the way to go. You never run out that way. I never run out. I always have my supply of Fox & Sons. So I want you to head over to foxandsons.com. Put in your order today. They ship fast. They ship now through the end of February. Also, by the way, you're going to get free shipping on any order over $37.99. By the way, while you're there, use discount code MCS to get 18% off any order over $25. Stephen Fox is a great man, a great friend, great supporter of the show. I encourage you to check out his coffee over at foxandsons.com.
Work for the same lobbyists, you know, but with when it comes to Trump, because he's not in that group, it's not pretend for them. They honestly are terrified of him because he's liable to do just about anything. Doesn't mean that he will. It just means that he could. They can't do anything. If you're at that position of power in Washington, D.C., you are in the club. And you are in the club because they've got the goods on you. So they can't, they're neutered. They can't do anything except hit each other with, you know, prop folding chairs. Donald Trump can come in and do stuff that they can't do. He can come in and really start to cause problems and talk about things that he's not allowed to talk, that they're not allowed to talk about, but he hasn't sworn the golden oath to Moloch or whoever or whatever is going on with the, whether it's the Freemasonic components to it, whether it's the Luciferian stuff, whether it's the pedophilia rings or whatever. Once you're in that group, you are captured. And he's not in that group. He's in all kinds of other groups. But because he's not ultimately controlled by that group, he's a threat. He's a threat to them.
So it's, I mean, and Trump is he's very much in the same social circles, but do you think it's literally maybe the fact that he was never actually in Skull and Bones, like several presidents have been? He was never actually at a Bohemian Grove meeting. He never went to that other level of things.
He's at the party, but not the after party.
Right, okay.
You know what I mean?
And like that's where all the fun happens, yeah.
That's where all the fun happens, right? That's where all the nonsense goes on. So he can be in it, but not of it, you know, right? He can be in this group with all these people, but not you know, like when we're going to move it back off site or underground,
like,
or
yeah,
wherever.
You've got money like us, but you've never drank blood out of a skull like us.
Have you gone to a Rothschild mansion and a full moon yet? See, if you haven't done that, then you're not really part of the group. So there's layers and levels to it, and there's factions, and this isn't as simple as this group wants this. You know, there's a lot of infighting. I mean, in the end, what they would ideally like is for things to remain the same, because they can deal with that. The small variables here and there. But the idea of Donald Trump, he distracts them from their other grift that they're very comfortable with. And he comes in and throws a big monkey wrench into it, potentially. Not in every aspect of it, but in some of them. And that's enough to just make these people crazy. They really despise him, though. I mean, I don't think that's an act. I don't think that the people that are trying... I think for some of these people, it is maybe a matter of life or death or self-preservation to get rid of him. Because I think some of them feel that... after what we have done to this guy the last couple of years, you've managed to make Donald Trump a victim. Think about that. That's quite a feat, right? But they've done it in some circles. They've managed to make him a victim. What do you think he's going to do when he comes back after having to deal with all this nonsense, all this criminality, this rampant criminality in the White House, Obama's third term? And then you find a way to get back in. Oh my goodness! That's going to send those Q people into fits thinking about that. Like that sort of revenge porn of like Trump comes back, doesn't have to worry about another reelection, and he just goes, you know, guns blazing. I mean, it's not going to happen, but I mean, that's the fantasy, right?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, that is the fantasy, because we all remember, you know, lock her up or what have you. So I wonder what they're really afraid of with Trump, because is it that he's going to go on the Donald Trump revenge tour, Donald Trump unhinged, whatever it may be. But I mean, if we look back to his last term, it's not like he really bucked the trends in tremendous ways, on some surface level ways, sure. But he brought in a lot of neocons, a lot of establishment types, and this sort of thing. Or is it maybe they realize, like, all right, he tried to play the game last time, and then we went really hard after him anyway. So maybe this time he does just say, and maybe it is as simple as he's not our friend, so he's going to put us out of jobs, and he's going to really hamper what we're trying to do here this time, especially because we couldn't take care of him last time.
Better put a stake through his heart. You know, he has that tendency to come back from the dead. I don't know. It's, you know, ultimately, that's not where the real power is. It's more of just this theater and sort of surface level distraction. But he does represent a monkey wrench for that. But you have to ask the question. Okay, so Joe Biden again? Really? That's the other option here? I know, and I'm not voting. I'm never voting for these people ever. So the last person I voted for was Ron Paul, like in 2008. You know,
and I'm not voting for these people. Ron Paul, right in on my record too. Yeah.
So I don't have a dog in this fight, but like, really, Joe, like, that's the calculate. You have to ask the sort of take a IQ test in the Democrats camp and ask what they're thinking. If the best that they can come, the best person you can find, 300 million people, 100 million may be eligible. The best person you can find is still Joe Biden? Seriously? Or is it that you, and Kamala Harris too, the dumbest person in the history of politics, a clear-cut, obvious diversity hire who is only put there because of her gender and her skin color? The dumbest person in politics. And that's the best you've got? Like, holy moly, this is not a good option. This is a recipe for Donald Trump to become the president again. And then the Democrats will cry and complain. And it's like, well, you dummies ran Joe Biden. What did you think was going to happen? He shit his pants with the Pope.
That's why it's got to be a t-shirt. That's why I always wonder, you know, is it sometimes it feels too intentional. You know, sometimes it feels too much like you can't really be putting up Joe Biden again. Really? You can't really be doing that and intend him to win. And you can't even really make Donald Trump out to be this much of a victim and really think it's going to work and not backfire on you. So that's when I always zoom out and put on the biggest tinfoil hat I can find and just think how much of this is just all a storyline. And the truth is probably a lot of it. And a lot of it is just, you know, a mix of, like you said, the real life actual feuds that goes on within all of this.
Yeah. You feel like you're halfway down the path and you go, this is so obvious. Like, I feel like maybe I'm walking into a trap. You know, Joe Biden is the president of the United States.
And then if you want to go further down that weirdness, is this all written for us rabbit hole? I was thinking about saving this for the smoke-filled room to bring up with you, but heck, here we are. I can't talk about Donald Trump nowadays without talking about these Ingersoll Lockwood Barron Trump books from like 100 years ago. You're familiar with this, I'm aware.
Oh, right? Yeah. I've heard about the books, and of course it takes you back to the John Trump stuff too, right?
Right. Right. Well, yeah, I mean, speak of Trump not being in those clubs, you know, again, he certainly has a family with an interesting history of sorts.
Yeah.
And I think when I first saw that, I was like, there's no way that's really real. No, it's really real. The way that John, I think it's Trump's uncle. Is that right?
Yeah.
John Trump. He is somehow the one that, and this, I never really understood how this all worked, but he was somehow the one that took control of Nikola Tesla's patents, something like that.
Took control of his equipment. Yeah.
The actual equipment, right?
Yeah. Out of the hotel he died in, you know, penniless. Yeah, he took custody of all the equipment. And then I'm not really sure after that point what happened to it. I think that's better. That's a conversation better suited for dark journalists.
Right, yes. And I do plan to do a deeper, darker dives on that kind of subject. But it is one of those things where you look back, and I've also seen some kind of video compilations of like different Trump references throughout the years, throughout the decades in various pop culture, whether it's The Simpsons, Back to the Future. There's a bunch of them. And when you add them all up, especially if you put them in a compilation video or something, they get even more interesting. But it really does make you think. That's all I can really say. It really makes you think, especially when there's a book called Barron Trump's Marvelous Underground Journey. And there's another one, I think, called The Last President, something like that. And they reference a Trump living in a tower on 42nd Street or 42nd Avenue. I mean, to the point of specificity that almost the only explanation might be time travel, or that these storylines are so goddamn programmed for us ahead of time that seeds can really be planted that far in advance. Either way, it's really a mind blowing thing to try to wrap your head around.
It really is. It brings in all of our favorites. It brings CERN, time travel, Mandela effect, Tavistock. You could wrap them all up into this, right? How much of this stuff is predictive programming? How much of this is you know what happens in the future and you can work your way backwards? The technology side of things with John Trump taking control of Tesla's work and Tesla's work being suppressed adds a whole interesting component to this, where you've got the possibility of hidden technologies, which we all know exist, but since they're hidden, you don't know to the extent what's actually going on. We've seen corporate sabotage. We've seen the likes of someone like Edison stealing patents and getting financed by the right sort of bankers or the right sort of industrialists, and their work going on to become more prevalent than the people that maybe had a better technology that was suppressed because of money. We've watched the pharmaceutical industry go through that with the Rockefellers and the Flexner Report and the creation of the medical schools that they controlled. So we've seen how some of these prominent, powerful families have operated in the past. And, you know, the Trump side of things with it just adds a whole new layer to it that it's so juicy.
It's so juicy. And I don't know what any of it means, but I do enjoy theorizing and thinking about it and trying to wrap my head around it. And then at the end of the day, having a laugh about it, because that's the only way we're going to get through this, like we mentioned earlier.
Yep. I do. It does become quite obvious that you know, like, Donald Trump's lawyer was Roy Cohn. Roy Cohn was involved with, like, the FBI.
Back to pro wrestling, Donald Trump was seen sitting with Roy Cohn in the front row of WrestleMania when WrestleMania took place at Trump Palace, like something like 25 years ago.
And it feels like that. So it's like, you know, it's like, oh, the FBI is going after Trump. It's like, you have to understand that that Trump's old attorney used to fight with the FBI 50 years ago. J. Edgar Hoover, they had such mutual assured blackmail on each other. There's a great story that Whitney Webb writes about how Roy Cohn threw this party at the Plaza Hotel, you know, Trump property, in which it was like everybody just was like so open about, you know, they all had such mutually assured blackmail information against each other that at Roy Cohn's party, J. Edgar Hoover showed up to the party dressed as a woman. And everyone was like, let's party. Like,
everyone in this room
is adversaries.
Right.
But there was so much. It got to a point where it was like, I could take you out. You could take me out. Why don't we just get together and everybody get naked in the ballroom.
Right. We've, like, all got the proverbial nukes pointed at each other anyway. So nothing left to do.
This weird sort of blending of organized crime and government and what's the difference? You know what I mean? How on some levels government is just organized crime. And how all these people were sort of working in the same world. But again, that's Trump. So that's like, you know, if you go back to the Tesla stuff, it's like 100 years of Trump connected people, obviously in New York City, and Washington, D.C. through John Trump, how that still continues. And then knowing that you have Barron to look forward to, at least according to the books.
Yeah. And then you look at this Barron, who's this absolute giant. I don't know. He's got to be 18, 19, 20. And he's an absolute giant. He looks even bigger than Trump. I'm not sure if he is, but he seems like he will be someday if he's not. And you got to think.
I saw a picture of him. Said he's 6'7". Turned 18.
Wow. 6'7". That's crazy. And then in these novels, Trump is like, there is a last president referred to. And then Barron is like the first king. So it's like,
oh, okay.
Okay. I don't know. It's all wild speculation. But since we're wildly speculating,
well, listen. Just one more reason for them to call Trump and his family the Antichrist, right?
Well, there you go. Yeah, and that's certainly a storyline, a potential storyline that you see out there a lot too. Because there's a lot of ways you can take this thing, and maybe I can get your larger thoughts on this thing. Because this is a phrase you hear a lot, especially in a lot of the podcasts you and I participate in, and a lot of people we talk to. There's this term called the Great Awakening, and it's kind of largely presented as like a counter. And I think many people that use it in an innocent way, just as sort of the counter narrative to the Great Reset. This is the sort of the counter force. There's the Great Reset people. They want you to eat the bugs, you own nothing, be happy, the Klaus Schwabs. And then there's the Great Awakening, which is more, you know, the people that are waking up, that are catching on to that thing. But I'm curious what you think of that, because now I've seen that phrase enough that it actually seems like very intentional marketing to me. And whenever I see something is intentional and I see it coming up in different places, I start to think, well, okay, is there something behind that as well? Is the Great Awakening supposed to be a siphon for people like me, people that might be wise to some of this stuff, but, well, what are we going to do with them? We need to siphon them off into something else. And, you know, there's a lot of rabbit holes that you can go down depending on where you go with the Great Awakening stuff, a lot of which can lead you into Q stuff, weird gematria stuff, a lot of the stuff we talked about earlier.
Yeah, you know, there's always going to be more of a mainstream version, and we're sort of more of the extreme version of the Great Awakening. It's like they're willing to take it so, you know, only so far, and we're willing to be like, hey, you want to go really deep down the rabbit hole? Like, you can come over here and hang out with us. We'll tell you all about it. I mean, on the one hand, I'm glad that people are interested in waking up. How far along that path they go, I think that'll just sort of depend on the person. But anybody that's trying to wake up people to what's actually happening, I'm in favor of that. They may not go as far as I would like for them to go, but I'm in favor of them at least starting that process, because, you know, it's a process. It takes a while. And sometimes some people go, oh, I get it. It's all bullshit. And others, they go, well, you know, they might have lied about COVID, but, you know, I'm still on 8 prescriptions from my doctor. It's like, all right, well, you're starting.
They didn't start lying 4 years ago
to COVID, but like, all right, so we're going to have to you're going to have to learn a little bit more. So, you know, maybe it's like training wheels for a lot of people. The Great Awakening side of things. It's like anything, though. It's like if you think that's interesting, come, you know, they're talking to you about like awakening to like Klaus Schwab and everything. It's like, okay, well, let me know when you're ready for multi-generational Italian banking bloodline families.
Yeah, let me know when you want to talk the Black Pope and all this.
When you want to talk about the Black Pope, then we can do that too. But I'm just glad that people are recognizing that there's a problem, because it's very easy to just kind of go along. I mean, there was a long stretch where it feels like nothing kind of happened, like years and years where like nothing major really happened. Then all of a sudden COVID happened, and it was a huge opportunity for people to wake up to something. You know what I mean? Like none of the crimes had been all that egregious before, for like a, you know, since like 9/11, you know, it'd been like 20 years where everything was, COVID was so egregious and so obviously bullshit on so many different levels, from the walk, you know, the 6 feet to the walking one direction down grocery store aisles to standing on a dot that's 6 feet apart from a person just to get on an airplane to sit 4 inches away from the same person. Like, it was so preposterous that it woke up a huge batch of people, and they need to go somewhere, because they're totally disoriented as to like who to believe and what to who to trust and what to make of this. And so you're going to have groups like the Great Awakening, you know, whatever that is, if it's the Great Awakening registered trademark, whatever.
Right.
Group of approved doctors that are not big pharma guys, but they still don't go all the way to the finish line. Like,
we agree with the AMA. We just didn't like what happened with the COVID stuff, kind of thing.
Right. You go, okay, well, good, I guess.
Right. But you're still enslaving us.
You okay, so you have questions about the COVID vaccines. Great. Would you like to know about regular vaccines? Like, are you ready for that next step? You know, so I suppose I'm glad that people are waking up and they're asking questions. I hope that process continues, because there's a lot more to know about it. And I think with COVID, they overplayed their hands a lot. Like, with, you know, like it was so authoritarian and so nonsensical in some of the edicts that came down, that it made people that might normally have slept walk through the whole thing, it woke them up. And that is like, I think that's kind of a huge opportunity for the alternative media, the actual alternative media, not the sort of new
alternative media, Inc.
Mainstream alternative media, as David Icke likes to call it. But like the actual people, it's a real opportunity for us to connect with an audience that is brand new to this information. That's just like, I know they lied to me about COVID, but I don't really, had my head down in my job for the last 15 years. I haven't really been paying attention to much else. What is this I hear about 9/11? It's like, okay. Like when you're ready.
How much time do you have?
Yeah. Have a seat. go watch Richard Gage's presentation on 9/11. And
I do wonder though, like sometimes the absurdity seems so extreme, kind of like we talked about with the burger and the shot earlier. I mean, sometimes it's so extreme that I almost wonder if it's like meant to shake some people out and maybe siphon them off to something. That's the, you know, the 4D chess, I guess, conspiracy theorist inside me here. I'm always thinking, okay, what's the conspiracy that I currently believe? You know, what's the thing that I'm buying into? Because I'm a human too. So I know that I'm getting hoodwinked on some shit that I buy into for sure.
So you know how you can watch a Pixar movie and the kids get one message out of it,
and
the adults get another. They're all laughing.
We're laughing at the subtle jokes, and they just think
you're laughing at little variations.
Right.
It's the same thing with these psychological operations. Mm. The vast majority of it is directed at the kids, the sheeple people, right? And it's funny because they're so stupid they can't figure it out. That's the joke.
Like, oh, it's so adorable. Like, they're just standing 6 feet apart and they're so
happy. They're so
fucking dumb. They know it's keeping
them safe. They just will do what we tell them to do. And then there's the adults in the Pixar component, and that's the adults in the COVID component. The ones that see what's actually going on. And for those people, it's the humiliation ritual of knowing that you know that they know what they're doing, and that you know that there's nothing that's going to be done about it. That's part of it too. That's what it feels like to me. Like you talk about how it's so preposterous and absurd, kind of almost like in a taunting way. For those that can see it, you're meant to see it, I think. I think you're meant to see it. You're meant to see that you can see it and that you recognize it. Nothing's going to change.
And we're getting away with it. And most of your neighbors are totally cool with this.
And we want you to see that too. We want you to see that there's nothing to see here. Mm. Because that has an effect too. So I think it works either way for them. Either you're dumb and you buy it and they control you that way, or they suck the soul out of you by showing you that you, even if you know what we're doing, we're still going to be doing it.
Well,
the Solzhenitsyn quote about, right, you know, we're lying, they're lying, we know they're lying, they know we're lying, you know, and yet the lying continues. And that's kind of where we are. We're at the point where it's like, they're saying, you know, get your fifth booster. And you're going, like, with a straight face, you're saying that?
And you're thinking, no one's going to believe that. And then you turn and you're like, four people you know are just like posting an Instagram with it where they just got it. And you're like, oh my God. Yes, they, oh my God.
And it should tell you everything that you need to know about what they think about you. You know, it should show people that they hate you. They despise you. They have zero respect for you. They don't even have enough respect for you to give you a good lie. They just told you that.
That's what hurts the most, Charlie, that they just don't have enough creativity. What upsets me as a creator.
I know you're going to be lying to us. We know it, right?
Spend some more time in the writer's room together, you know?
Appreciate the attention to detail. Right. When they pull off a false flag that's a really good one, and you go, I know you fuckers did it, but that was buttoned up tight. That's a tough one to figure out. And then you see the sloppy ones and you go, boy, you just sent the JV team in there to pull this one off, didn't you?
Right. Well, yeah. Oh. When you were on the first time you were on the show in episode 3, we talked about all sorts of false flags. And I think there is definitely a range. There's some that you're like, if I didn't really dig into that, I would just, yeah, I'd be like, wow, that happened. Everyone believes that. Other stuff, it's like, how does anyone think the Boston thing happened?
Some of them are more sensitive than others. Some of them will get you a $1 billion lawsuit, right? If you start talking about those, right? And others, they'll let you speculate about all day. And yet others, they just pretend like didn't happen at all. Like, Las Vegas shooting, like that just kind of fell, you know. So sometimes the giveaway on the false flags is, or that there's a problem, is the unusual lack of a response from the media. Because you know what the media loves. They love Stormwatch 2024 or Election Watch, or we've got an inbound hurricane. There's a hurricane coming. We've got a disaster. They love all that shit.
That's something,
right?
I've learned in Florida. Every hurricane is a 3-day event. Now, don't get me wrong. Some people have had hurricane problems. But for us, it's a 3 days of hype. And then we see it drizzles outside our house.
But they never miss the opportunity to use that to generate all the buzz and talk about this really scary thing. And that's what you've come to expect, because even though it's kind of shitty, you understand the math behind it. We're going to get more eyeballs. We're going to sell more ads. We're going to get whatever. It makes sense. What doesn't make sense is when you have the biggest mass shooting in the history of the country and you pretend like you didn't. And you never talk about it. You show 9/11 constantly. But you never talk about Las Vegas.
You want gun control. The other school, the Connecticut school, so to speak, that comes up all the time, constantly. No one ever says, remember Las Vegas. You know, no one ever wears a...
No. And is it political? Is it because they shot at a bunch of white country Western people? I mean, maybe. Maybe they don't want any sympathy for those people at all. I don't know. But it's weird that they don't talk about some of these things, so...
Very much so. Well, perhaps, Charlie, you and I will talk about some of these things as we head over into the smoke-filled room, where we'll be hopping in right now for our premium subscribers. But, Charlie, it's been a pleasure having you on. And, of course, before I let you go, feel free to let everybody know. They're smart people. They can figure it out on their own. But feel free to let everybody know how they can find all your work and macroaggressions and anything else you got going on.
Macroaggressions.io is the brand new website. That's a good place to find out about the books and the podcasts and all that good stuff. And social media, I'm on Twitter at Macroaggression, where I argue with robots and get sucked into petty disagreements with...
Don't argue with robots, Charlie. I don't recommend it. Never works that well.
People that probably aren't even real.
Well, Charlie, it's been a pleasure as always. I will continue to enjoy your work on Macroaggressions, and I'll see you in the smoke-filled room.
Right on.
All right, friends, I hope you enjoyed today's conversation. And remember, if you're listening here on the public feed, that means you're only getting about 2/3 of the conversation, because every one of these interviews goes approximately 30 minutes longer in what is called the smoke-filled room bonus segment. To get the complete version of every episode, just become a subscriber to The Mark Claire Show. You can do so on Patreon, on Subscribestar, on Rockfin. You can find all the links you need over at markclaire.com. That's Mark Claire, MarkClaire.com. Until next time, my friends, in case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.